From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 8th day of June, 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Greg Johnson of the Andersons will join us to take a look at the cash grain situation. He's from right here in Champaign County, and we'll discuss the weather forecast, too. That with Mark Russo at Brisk Pulse in Chicago, Illinois, right here on Illinois Public Media. It's Public Radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's take a moment now for some calm. Here's the sound of nature silence from my backyard. Here the way the numbers finished up in Chicago. July corn up 2.5, today at 333.75, December at 347.5, up 2.25, and the March of next year at 359, up 2. July soybeans down 3 at 864.75, November at 878, down 1.5, and January at 883.25, a penny and a quarter lower. The bean oil down 4 cents, bean meal off 70 cents, and July soft red winter wheat down 3.75 cents at $5.11.5. The hard red July, the harvest month there at $4.60.5, down 0.75 cents. Live cattle in the June at 94.12.5, up 22.5 for the day. August feeder cattle down $1.10 at $133.07.5 per 100 pounds, and lean hogs at $48.57.5, $1.12.5 higher. And crude oil for the day down $1.40. Ethanol about a penny and 0.3 cents higher. Heating oil or diesel fuel down 2.9 cents. And gasoline off a penny and 0.6 cents. Natural gas just about unchanged on the afternoon. The Dow Jones Industrial Average up around 330 points. The U.S. dollar down 0.28. And the gold futures at $1,698, up around $21.80. We're now joined by Kurt Kimmel at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, to take a look at this marketplace for Monday. Hey, thanks for being with us, Kurt. Hope things are well there in Bloomington Normal.
We're doing well. Historic day. Another higher close for corn on Monday, which has been very, very hard to obtain here the last 3 to 4 months, so we'll welcome it.
Why did this market go higher for corn?
I think some spread unwinding, selling beans, buying corn. We saw corn just a little firmer. The funds are short over 250,000 contracts still. Also, too, corn demand's fairly decent. Corn shipments were strong once again, so we're exporting what we sold. But two, weather. I think we're starting to see a little concern here. Even though this afternoon's crop conditions report might see a 1% increase in the good to excellent category, you take Illinois on east, these stands are still kind of ragged looking. The warmer, drier weather has been beneficial, but there's ideas that some of this might not be replanted. And also, too, that it's opposite from last year. We got the crop in the late fashion, but it came up and it looked fairly good and finished strong. But this corn crop might struggle here in the eastern belt, so we'll have to monitor the good to excellent category in the eastern belt from here out. But once we move past this weather event here in the next 24 to 48 hours, the sizzle part starts to kick in for about 2 weeks in through here, where rainfall is going to be somewhat limited, and there's some fairly decent dry pockets in some areas that could keep the crop under a little bit of a stress as we move forward. Soybeans, we continue to hear about Chinese buying, but there was real no confirmation on some sales, and so therefore the market took a little bit of a breather. The market is approaching some overbought conditions and some resistance levels. The popular sell signals are starting to kick in through here, where it might warrant keeping an eye on the market to maybe get caught up on a few sales if need be. The main marker, of course, will be this week's monthly supply-demand report. It's probably too early to really adjust the production a whole lot, but demand's probably going to slip slightly and keep those hefty carryout estimates that we've been accustomed to seeing here in the last two reports.
Do you know what those numbers will look like, or have some early guesses from the trade?
Well, for 995, I'll give you the numbers ahead of time.
Well, we'd like that, but I'm going to guess against
Duke and Duke.
Okay. Yes.
Oh, a historic.
It was a good movie.
Movie. Average trade estimate on the new crop corn is 3.35. Last month we were 3.318, so up about 40 million bushels. Old corn, 2.163. Last month we were just 2.019, so about 70 million bushels. Bean-wise, 429 million bushel carryout new crop beans versus last month of 405. And the old crop beans, 578 versus 580. So the bean numbers, you know, a little hanging in there okay. The corn just going to be a little higher on the ethanol. These ethanol plants are firing back up. We're still feeding a lot of grain. True feed usage remains high. And it's going to continue to set the stage for end of the month fireworks in here. I don't know if the acreage estimates will be the main thing, but the grain stocks report and see what type of usage we've seen and how much shrink we've seen in these grain bins.
So those are a couple of reports, one of them coming up on Thursday. That's the WASDE numbers. And then, of course, the end of the month acreage and grain stocks numbers. However, this afternoon, we will have the weekly crop progress and condition report. You said it would be important to watch the Eastern Corn Belt for the good to excellent condition numbers, especially for corn. What are the expectations from the trade?
As of right now, as a nation, we're expected to see corn conditions 75% good to excellent versus 74% last week. There's a range of 73% to 76% good to excellent, so they're fairly tight there. Soybeans last week were 70% good to excellent. The average trade estimate's coming in about 71% good to excellent, and that's got a range of 69% to 72%. The other thing, too, is keep an eye on the Western Belt here as winter wheat harvest starts to pick up momentum. They're estimating about have 12% of the wheat crop, and that's mainly in the deep south through Texas.
How are farmers dealing with the corn they have yet to sell?
Well, in a holding pattern. You know, they've been sporadic on the situation. That's going to be a good question as we approach end of the month and through here. End of the month is another basis pricing time window in here. Do I roll it or do I go ahead and move it? So I would use this strength here going into the middle of the month to take advantage of these commodity fund short covering and a little strength in some basis areas to get caught up. There's still quite a bit to sell. A lot of producers have been focused on sign up to receive some more payments here to help take this edge off.
Your expectation is that they should start to really calculate that into total income and then pull the trigger when they find something that's useful?
I think so. I think there's a lot of moving parts in here. Producers have been open to the idea of moving the cash grain, doing some replacement strategies, option premiums fairly low, volatility is fairly low as we start to enter the growing season in through here. So there's some opportunities in here to generate some cash revenue, but maintain a little bit of ownership in case some type of weather event would happen later on in the growing season. But it's going to take a major weather event to get the ball rolling much further north on prices.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Very good.
And, of course, is Kurt Kimmel with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Well, last week, the United States 9th District Court of Appeals vacated a decision as it relates to dicamba soybeans and cotton. Aaron Hager, weed scientist at the University of Illinois, is with us. Aaron, thanks so much for being on hand. This would restrict the use, actually eliminate the use of some dicamba herbicides, with the exception, I think, of one product from Syngenta. What does it mean for the growing season in the state of Illinois for soybeans?
Todd, the Illinois Department of Agriculture reviewed the decision from the Court of Appeals for the 9th Circuit. And their determination was that as soon as that mandate was issued, that all distribution, sale, and application of the products Extendamax, Fexapan, and Ingenia were to stop. And so either June 2nd or June 3rd, whenever that decision was handed down, effectively was the last date that producers in the state of Illinois could apply those products.
There is one product left that producers could use in the state of Illinois?
There is, and that's Tavium, which is a product from Syngenta, which is a free mixture of S-metolachlor and dicamba. And it never came to a marketplace until 2019, so it technically was not covered by the decision to vacate the registrations of the products in 2018.
And farmers will need to follow the restrictions for that product that applied to dicamba for use on soybeans in the state?
Yes, they still have to follow all the federal restrictions, or those restrictions that are on the federal label. And that does include it has to be applied within 45 days of planting. And then you have all the other record-keeping requirements identical to those of the three product registrations that were canceled. In addition to the federal requirements, you have to remember also that in Illinois, there's a 24C label for Tavium that has two other restrictions. Number one is a June 20th application deadline. So in other words, after June 20th, Tavium can no longer be applied in Illinois, nor can it be applied on days when either the actual or forecast air temperature exceeds 85 degrees. So there is one product still, dicamba-containing products, still registered for use on dicamba soybean, but we cannot overlook the same restrictions still apply to that product.
And while farmers in other states will need to double-check with their state to find out what the restrictions are like, Illinois is just one of a handful of states that is saying this is a no-go. Other states have said, we're not sure, go ahead and apply.
In essence, I think what some of the other states are waiting on is for guidance from the U.S. EPA, because in the 27 years that I've been here at Illinois, I never recall anything like this happening previously during the growing season. We certainly have had instances where products have been canceled either voluntarily or their labels pulled by U.S. EPA, but generally there's always been a period, a phase-out period, so to speak. For example, I was thinking earlier today, remembering when Bladex or cyanazine was pulled from the marketplace. I think that whole process, it was a gradual process that became more and more restrictive over about a 2 or 3 or 4 year period. If we understand the Ninth Circuit Court ruling, again, their mandate was to stop using those three products immediately. So states are waiting to see what U.S. EPA guidance will give them. But Illinois, South Dakota, and Minnesota, all those, the three states' departments of agriculture, their interpretation of the ruling is that it had to cease when that ruling was handed down.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate it, Aaron.
You bet.
Aaron Hager is weed scientist at the University of Illinois. On this Monday, let's check what's been happening in the weather forecast with Mark Russo. He's at Risk Pulse in Chicago, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Mark. Thanks for being here.
Good afternoon, Todd.
I want to start with crystal ball as it is making landfall. And I'm wondering, because last week as we were talking about this, the thought was that crystal ball would get sort of separated into two functions and that it would come up and kind of make a hard left and then be shifted across to the east. And it might take a little different path than what we really expect from these storms, which is normally they'd come up the Mississippi Valley and hit the Ohio River Valley and kind of drift off to the east at that point. What's the pattern look like this time around?
Well, Todd, Cristobal is making a pretty unique trek up to the north here. And over the next few days, it will be tracking across the lower Mississippi Valley into the central and even northern sections of the Mississippi River Valley here, all the way up into Wisconsin and even into Canada. Actually, that's never occurred with any tropical system here, making it this far north, really in the record book. So this is a very unique situation. Like you said, typically they tend to kind of veer off to the east and impact more of the southern or eastern Midwest. But this is going kind of right up the gut of the Midwest, right across the Mississippi River Basin, all the way up northward into Canada. It is going to be moving fairly quickly here, so we're not expecting any kind of like heavy inundating flooding rainfall over large sections. And if anything, it's actually going to bring some relief to some of the, you know, drier areas here recently across the Midwest. It's also going to bring some gusty winds with it as well during the day tomorrow and on into Wednesday. Some gusts can exceed even 40 or even 50 miles per hour. But again, it's moving fast, so the duration of impact here in the Midwest is going to be fairly short-lived.
So what do the rainfall amounts look like?
Yeah, Todd, rainfall totals that we're forecasting will be generally in the 1 to 3 inch range across much of Missouri into eastern sections of Iowa and then on into Wisconsin. For here in Illinois and even western Indiana, rain activity is going to be fairly limited, a quarter to maybe 3/4 of an inch in pockets, but the highest rainfall amounts will be along and just west of the Mississippi River.
Wisconsin and Michigan going to pick up more rainfall?
Not as much Michigan here. Rather, Wisconsin will pick up more significant totals with the remnants of Cristobal here. Again, kind of in that 1 to 3 inch range, especially across the central and western sections of the state.
What about as you go west? You mentioned it might be a little drier that way.
Yeah, we're seeing more significant dryness evolve across the plains region, and that extends from dryness out across the Rockies and on into the southwestern U.S. That looks to continue over the next couple of weeks as this ridge of high pressure looks to really make its home across the plains and eastern Rockies. So the dryness will be expanding, and again, for the central and western Corn Belt, if it wasn't for Cristobal's remnants, the region would be in a distinct drier than normal pattern over the next couple of weeks. So certainly something to keep an eye on as we go through the remainder of June.
Has that high intensified over the last 4 to 5 days?
It certainly has, Todd. The ridge of high pressure has strengthened, and as most ridges do, they go through periods of amplification or strengthening and then weakening. And so that's going to be the same general theme coming up over the next couple of weeks. In fact, by the end of this week, the ridge will be in a weakened mode, but we do expect it to strengthen here later on next week.
What do you see for the Black Sea area?
Yeah, the Black Sea region is also being influenced by a ridging of high pressure. In fact, for the next 2 weeks, it's a distinct hotter than normal and drier than normal pattern, especially in the eastern sections of the Black Sea region. So corn and winter wheat acreage within eastern Ukraine and western Russia will be the driest and the hottest here basis normal, which is something to keep an eye on here going forward.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it, and we'll have you help us do that, please.
You're welcome, Todd. Thanks for having me.
That's Mark Russo. He's with Risk Pulse in Chicago, Illinois. Now we're joined by Greg Johnson. He's at the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. Good afternoon to you, Greg. It's kind of a nice day out, if a little warm eventually.
It is, but we'll take it. We need the heat. We need the sunshine. We need a few days / week of dry weather, at least here in East Central Illinois, where we had heavy rains last Wednesday and Thursday. I guess to the west, where they didn't get as much rain, they probably wouldn't mind having a little bit of rain anytime, but we could certainly go a week without rain. That would be perfect for us, but we'll see what we get here Wednesday.
Yeah, Mark Russo says we're going to get some rain, so we'll see. And the guys to the west, too. At least parts of eastern Iowa and going east into the eastern Corn Belt are going to get some rain, so we'll figure that out. And we've had some heat, though you do make a point, which is the crops appear to me that they're lagging just a little bit at this point, and it's not because they didn't get planted on time. What is your assessment? What are you hearing from farmers?
Yeah, here in East Central Illinois, you know, probably a 9-10 county region, very thin stands. A lot of corn had to be replanted and then replanted again after the rains last week. I think the government's basically confirming that. If you look at the percentage of good to excellent corn in the state of Illinois, this is probably one of the lowest five ratings in the last 30 years. So we are off to a poor start. Now, that doesn't mean we can't finish strong, because we have in some of those years, we've actually turned out to have a pretty good crop. But what we're looking at right now is we're definitely off to a poor start on corn, and things are going to have to improve from here on out for us to have a trend line type yield.
On the flip side, what are the demand fundamentals looking like at this point?
Well, we are starting to see people get back to work in certain states, and so ethanol demand is picking up. Exports are still a little weak. and the livestock feed is starting to pick back up. So I would say we're starting to get back some of the demand loss, but it's going to take a while. We're not going to get back to where we were, but if we can get back to 85-90% of where we were, I think that's probably the best we can hope for, but it's better than where we were a month ago, that's for sure.
Is that what the rest of the company is telling you about ethanol demand?
Well, we had shut down our ethanol plants for about 45 days, and now they're back up and running. So, you know, the margins are thin, but, you know, at least that way we can have people working and providing a product. So it's not ideal by any stretch, but it's better than where we were 45 days ago.
How's consumption on the livestock feed side, in your opinion?
Well, these slaughterhouses are adapting. You know, they can't get back to 100% in a lot of them, but they can get back up to 80-90%. So I'm really surprised that we haven't had more bottlenecks as far as supply is concerned in the grocery stores, but maybe that's still to come. But you know, at least we're starting to, you know, get them opened up and running at somewhat close to 100% efficiency. So, you know, it's going to have a little bit of a ding on the demand side of the equation. But like I say, 80-90% is better than 50%.
And then finally, the export market for both corn and soybeans.
Well, China has bought both corn and soybeans from the U.S. here over the last 3 or 4 weeks. With beans, every time they buy, it seems like there's some trade tensions between the U.S. and China, and we've gone back. But here in the last week to 10 days, we haven't seen those tweets and wire reports about tension between the U.S. and China. It's probably still there. It's just not being made public, hopefully. So, you know, we had a good week for soybeans last week, 27, 28 cents higher. The positive export news in soybeans has not been offset by negative trade tension talk. And if we can continue that, then I still think that you know, with the value of the dollar declining, U.S. beans are now very attractive to China. And I look for China to continue to buy U.S. soybeans, and that should help the soybean market out a little bit more.
It's coming down to the wire now for old crop corn, soybeans too, for that matter. But I think corn is a bigger problem for producers. What do they need to think about?
Well, I think they just really need to factor in the government payments along with the price. Nobody likes the price. I mean, you know, low $3 prices is terrible. There's no getting around that. But like you say, with extra supplies on hand, the market just doesn't feel like it needs to pay up very much. So it's going to be a struggle for old crop corn. We are running out of time. Farmers are running out of time. So I think we just have to get the best price we can, add the government payments in, and then hope for better prices next year.
And before I let you go, how did the market trade for the day today?
A little bit of fund buying in the corn. The funds are extremely short corn. With the whole growing season ahead of us, I think the funds decided to cover a little bit of their short position today.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thank you, Todd.
Greg Johnson is with the Andersons. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report and helps us wrap it up for this Monday afternoon. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.